Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, four lingering Texans questions as we head into week two on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. These are general questions about the team, not so much questions about Sunday. But I think week one gave us reason for optimism, but I think there are still some very important open-ended things going on with this team. Seth, first question.
Okay.
Did two of the young players on this team that people were enthusiastic about get Wally Pipped in the first week of the season? And that would be Charlie Heck getting Wally Pipped by Marcus Cannon and Anthony Miller getting Wally Pipped by Danny Amendola.
It's just ironic that in those situations, it's the exact opposite of a Wally Pip, because those are the older guys taking over for the young up-and-coming guys, as opposed to Wally Pipp being replaced by Joe DiMaggio.
But early in camp, I would have said, you know, Charlie Heck's probably going to be the starting right tackle, and Danny Amendola wasn't even a Texan at that point.
Ironic. It's a valid term. It's ironic, though, that in these situations, a couple, like Danny Amendola is 35 years old.
Right.
Marcus Cannon is what, 34?
32, I mean, 33. Yeah, they're whippersnappers.
Is he 33? Okay.
Yeah, something like
Amendola, I mean, offensive linemen age better than wide receivers typically. Amendola is old, but I feel like Amendola, perhaps spurred on by his friend Tom Brady's accomplishments, might keep playing until he's 40 or so. Like, he could probably keep on doing what he's doing for a long while. Now, I think that this is the other thing. Amendola might be the perfect tutor or mentor to Anthony Miller for a lot of reasons. One, just because he's an adept and accomplished slot receiver, which is, slot receivers, half mental, half physical. It's a whole lot of reading coverages, being on the same page with your quarterback, all those things. But Amendola had his injury issues earlier in his career. And Anthony Miller has been banged up and injured and had chronic shoulder issues. So maybe Anthony Miller can glean something from the way Danny Amendola figured out a way to keep himself healthy. And I do think part of it with Amendola, and I'm guilty of this too, I think some of his injury issues were overblown. It was just that he showed off real promising, and then he had a couple bad injury years. But so there's that. But I think that as long as Amendola stays healthy this year, given that the Texans want to either tank with dignity or they want to be competitive, still being focused on the long term, whatever you want to call it, I think Amendola can provide a certain amount of stability. He's good for a few extra first downs per game that you might not otherwise get with anybody else. He's not going to have the home run strikes necessarily, but he's going to keep the chains moving and keep the box scores respectable.
What about Cannon?
Cannon's an interesting one, because, look, if the Texans are going to try to establish a zone running game, do a lot of those things, I don't know if he's athletic enough at this point to be really good in that scheme. The Patriots run all kinds of blocking schemes, so Cannon's done it all. I did notice a couple times in short yardage and goal line, man, Cannon still packs a wallop. Like, he is a big dude, and when he gets everything moving in the right direction, he can just really truck stick a few people. And I don't think Charlie Heck has that in him. So I think what you're gonna see is a rotation of some sort between those two.
Okay.
I think that, which I'm fine with. I mean, we saw it with Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown came along slowly, and Dwayne Brown was a first round draft pick. Dwayne Brown rotated in, and people don't like that. It's because it's not ideal and it's not what you want, but sometimes that's the best you've got, and I wouldn't mind seeing that for a while. I think Cannon's experience will help a lot. I think there are certain situations and certain game plans where he might be better, but I that's what I'm expecting for the next several weeks to see some kind of rotation there at right tackle. And if Charlie Heck plays his way in to be the starter, he will. But I think they're really going to make him earn it. They're not just going to say, "Hey, here's a young guy with promise. Here you go." And you know, the other part of that too, Sean, is that Cannon was kind of on a pitch count anyway.
Yeah.
Cully talked about that last week. He's still playing his way back into shape after a year off and knee surgery. So it kind of makes for a non-contentious rotation situation.
Yeah, Jerron Christian got a bunch of snaps last week, so I think a rotation probably makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two, how long will it take Zach Cunningham to acclimate to Lovie Smith's defense?
That's a tough one because Cunningham's struggled in coverage his entire career. He's never been as good in pass coverage as his athleticism would suggest.
So am I hearing that the answer might be never?
It might be never, right. What I'm hoping is that sometimes it's just a matter of what you focus on. And I think that Cunningham is a really good run defender, and he's probably always hung his hat on that. And he likes being seen as the guy that goes sideline to sideline, and that's all awesome stuff, especially in 1994. But it's 2021. It's different. If you want to be one of the best off-ball linebackers in the league, you've got to be good in pass coverage. That's what you get the attention for. That's what you really should be getting paid for, is your ability to be a dual threat, somebody that can cover but also stop the run. And that part of his game is missing right now. He's physically capable of doing it. It's just picking up on it and understanding exactly how to get to his spots, how to pick up the routes, how to do all that stuff in pass coverage. Let's give him until week six.
Okay.
He's had a whole training camp. And I'd like to see steady improvement between now and then. But if you want him to get to a point where he's one of the genuinely better off-ball linebackers in the league, then he's got to get better than he is right now.
I would say the flip side to Zach Cunningham, you know, a player who seems to be acclimating very quickly, who I think needs to, if you're a Texan fan, to Lovie Smith's defense, different positions. But I was really excited about the way Ross Blacklock played on Sunday against the Jags.
Yep. Yeah, and he started to pour it on, too, I think, as he got more opportunities, as maybe he's got more comfortable. And this is a guy, too, remember that he didn't get a whole lot of snaps last year. So he's still learning about NFL regular season football and how it's a little bit different, especially in this scheme. I talked to Lovie Smith about this during training camp a little bit. Sometimes when you take a guy who's coming from a system where you have to be super disciplined and, you know, play the run first and be extremely conscious of your gap control and everything, you would think, okay, I'll stick him in a system where you get to just get upfield and be fast and free and loose, and it's going to be awesome. It takes a little bit of an adjustment. It's kind of like when you let an animal out of its pen for the first time. They're a little like a cat gets out of the house for the first time.
Yeah.
And they're kind of they're looking around and they're super cautious. They're like, wait a second, can I actually go? Wait, somebody's about to grab me, right? And I saw a little bit of that in Ross Blacklock during training camp, where he had some really good plays where he was just getting upfield and going. But there are other times where he almost looked like, wait a second, am I going to get yelled at for doing this?
Right.
Oh, okay, I get to do this? That's how I was when Gary Kubiak first took over, like just for the way he operates his team. I'd never had anything but like old school hard asses as football coaches. So when Kubiak comes along and he's like, hey, Seth, you know, you're 30 years old. Why don't you just not practice in the afternoon? I'm like, well, this is obviously some kind of a trap.
Right.
He's obviously testing me to see if I'm tough enough. So I said, no, I'm good, coach. He's like, no, I'd really like you to take the afternoon. Nope, I'm good, coach. I'm good.
you're like red in Shawshank. Like Gary Kubiak's like, you want to take the afternoon off? No, coach, I'm an institutional man now.
It's like, Seth, you can call me Gary. No, sir. I'm raising my hand to go to the bathroom.
Right. You don't have to ask to take a leak. Just go.
Sometimes when you've had nothing but extreme discipline all the time, it freaks you out a little bit when you don't have it.
All right, two more real quick questions here. Four questions lingering with the Texans. Were the Texans that much better than Jacksonville, or did they just get lucky with a couple big plays?
I think that they did get – okay. They didn't get lucky with a couple big plays. There were a couple of big plays that weren't necessarily high percentage plays,
right.
But it wasn't like they were thrown up completely on a prayer. I think when when Brandon Cooks caught both of those deep balls, Tyrod Taylor knew exactly what he was doing. He knew what the opportunity was because of the coverage and because of where Brandon Cooks was, and because he'd been able to extend the play. He could take those deep shots. Now, you're not always going to hit those deep shots, but the Texans still would have had a convincing victory versus the Jaguars without it. If you look at the – I mean, you could fool yourself into thinking the Jaguars were competitive in that game by looking at the box score, I suppose. They were never competitive in that game. Really, after – I would say, let's see, when – they had that one nice drive in the first quarter, right? The Jaguars did?
Yeah.
That was about it. That was a, that was about the only time where the game was really in question.
14-7, yeah.
Yeah, I think by the time you got down to the end of the first half, the Texans were taking over, and that was just pretty much going to be it.
Yep.
They just didn't Trevor Lawrence will be better than he played that game, but Trevor Lawrence was not going to win that football game that day. So, yeah, they were – like any game that's that lopsided, usually there's a little bit of luck involved.
Sure.
Like a few things have to go right for it to be that lopsided, but I don't take anything away from the Texans' winning effort. It could have been a much closer game, yes, but they were going to win that game.
They were 100% the better team. I'm with you on that. Last one real quick, and we'll talk more about this later on the show. Is this the real Tyrod Taylor? Like, is this the Tyrod Taylor we're going to get every week?
It's the real Tyrod Taylor, but you're not going to get it every week.
Yeah.
I think that there will be, as teams start to get a little bit of a book and they can watch film on him, you got to remember, quarterbacks in a new offense, especially a quarterback that you haven't seen in a few years, really is a genuine full-time starter. It's kind of like seeing a pitcher for the first time in the majors. It takes a little while for people to adjust and see, you know, like, okay, what does this kid have? What exactly is he? Oh, all right, second or third time you see him, it's a lot different. Tyrod Taylor in this offense with Tim Kelly and David Culley and everything else, it's going to take a couple games for people to start to realize, okay, this is what they like to do, this is what they can't do. So it'll get tougher and tougher. I don't think you're going to get 17 performances right, like you did last week, but you saw the mobility. That's still there. Yeah, he's 32 years old. He can still run, and he's probably smarter about taking hits than he was 7 years ago.
Yep.
So I think he's going to be a wild card because of his mobility every single week.
The NFL made an announcement at halftime of last night's Thursday night game that as soon as they made it, I said, oh my God, I got to hear Seth Payne's reaction to this. Brace yourself. Next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the big announcement last night at halftime. I don't know that this could have been a better announcement for the purposes of content on this show. If you were asking me what the best possible news for Payne and Pendergast, the morning show on Sports Radio 610, would be as it pertains to the NFL's halftime announcement last night, what would be the best possible scenario? We got it. Because starting on November 17th, set your DVR, Seth, the Indianapolis Colts will be featured on the first in-season Hard Knocks.
Oh, thank God.
That is the best news I have ever heard.
When does it start?
November 17th.
No, of course it starts November 17th. They couldn't be bothered to actually start in the they couldn't be bothered to start at the beginning of a season.
And no.
We're going to pick up midway through the season because Jim Irsay was 100% promised that at some point this series will feature Jim Irsay playing in his band. There's no way. This is how Jim Irsay agreed to this. Was it, hey, okay, Jim, we'll show you playing. I don't know. I'm guessing he probably plays bass in his band. We'll show you playing bass and with your band. It'll be great.
So it's basically
don't worry, just, yeah, we'll treat you real well.
It's an infomercial for his band. What's the name of his band?
That's not. And by the way, that's not an insult to bass players or anything. It's really, really hard to be a good bass player.
Yeah.
It's just I don't expect that Jim Irsay's band is good. And at least he can muddle his way through base.
Right. So how excited are you to see not just the Colts, but I would imagine the state of Indiana featured so prominently on the back end of the season here?
Well, and you know, the other thing, too, is like the reason you would want to do stuff like this is because you get to show your players out in a more natural environment and also doing good in the community. During training camp, there's not that many community help events that you can do. But on Tuesdays during the season, you get out in the community and you go do charity stuff and everything. So they'll probably show the Colts players out like at Indiana State University teaching the students how to read. Like a lot of like good stuff like that where you really get into the heart and soul.
You're saying go to a college and teach college kids in Indiana how to read?
Yeah, that's what they spend their freshman year doing there. Not in Notre Dame. I know you went to Notre Dame, and you got to be able to read to get into Notre Dame, but it's not like that at the other places. They're like, okay, we'll take you. They'll pull you off the cow's teat, and because they drink milk right from the teat up there in Indiana.
Right.
It's disgusting.
They cut out the middleman of the supermarket and just go straight to the cow.
Yeah. So there's that. They'll probably get to show, you know, one thing as a player that you wouldn't realize from watching on television, they play this fun in-stadium game. It's kind of like Where's Waldo? It's just they call it Find the Minority in the Crowd. And they'll be like, oh, there he is. There's one. Oh, no, there's one over there. But for the most part, the 99.9% crowd up there in Indianapolis or at Colts games, they like to make a game of that.
So we'll learn that game. We'll get to see them doing fine things in the community, like teaching college students how to read. Okay.
They could take the bus tour of places Jim Irsay has scored hard drugs. That's a fun one. That's
I would go on that tour in a
it's
second.
It's cheap, too. Yeah. That's a good one.
Complimentary meth. That would be great.
Why does it not start until November?
I don't know.
This thing's got a real potential to fizzle out if they suck by then.
Well, that's
Carson Wentz is going to suck.
That's okay. Then, and I'm actually looking at the Colts schedule because that is one serious thing I did want to bounce off of you here. Is okay. It starts on November 17th. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's 10 games into the season for the Colts. They could very well be covering the worst kind of team. And Seth, I know you're going to say, yeah, a team from Indiana. Not that.
Right.
Not just that. they could be covering a team that's in purgatory. You know what I mean? Like, to me, 10 games into this, like, the Texans would probably be a more compelling team to cover 10 games into the season, because chances are you're talking about covering a team that's going for the first pick in the draft. You know, the odds are. I think you either want to be covering a team that is in a disaster rebuild mode, or you want to be covering a team that's on a collision course going to the Super Bowl, that kind of thing.
You know how – this is the thing, Sean – you know how Hard Knocks does the thing where they overly dramatize the preseason games? Remember this year during the Cowboys, they had that one player's mother who was up in the stands screaming like it was the Super Bowl.
Yes.
You know, when they're like looking like she was going to pass out when what's his name there, that quarterback threw. Who's the quarterback that I hate?
Ben DiNucci.
Ben DiNucci, yeah. When Ben DiNucci threw his third interception in a preseason game, she acted like they just lost the Super Bowl. They overly dramatize these things. So are they going to do that with, I don't know, I guess they're two games out of the wild card, but the mighty Houston Texans are coming to town. And then people aren't going to fall for that the way they do in the preseason.
They're going to start the season. I think the Colts have a really good chance of starting the season 1-6. They lost to Seattle already. They play the Rams this weekend. They're going to lose this weekend. They go to Tennessee. They'll lose that game. They'll go to Miami. They'll be underdogs in Miami. They go to Baltimore. Baltimore may not be as good as we thought, but they're still better than Indianapolis. I'll take Lamar Jackson. Then they host the Texans. Then they go to San Francisco, host the Titans, and then they finally get a little bit of a reprieve with back-to-back home games with the Jets and the Jags, and then Hard Knocks begins. Seth, they'll be lucky to be 5-5. When this series starts.
Well, that's the drama they're looking for. That's when they'll be able to set that up pretty well.
Yes.
It's like, okay, they're trying to make the playoffs, or this is for their dignity. There'll be some young rookie by then that's playing well. I wonder sometimes, wait, am I just biased against Indiana because I've seen so many stupid, awful, dumb things there, or because every experience I've ever had in Indiana was an unpleasant one? So I try to look outside it, and I think sometimes I read this book during the off season called Anthropocene Reviewed, which is by he's an Indianapolis resident. Mm. Imagine that. Who can write? It's John Green, He wrote The Fault in Our Stars. A very good author, very interesting person. He, of course, was educated in Alabama. He grew up in Alabama, and that's how he ended up being the most literate person in Indianapolis. He went from Alabama to Indiana.
Right, right.
But he likes to say that the motto for Indianapolis should be, Indianapolis, you got to live somewhere. And that's actually something that he wrote in a book. He also said, he pointed out that one of their major thoroughfares is named Ditch Road, which could have been named, you could have named it Kurt Vonnegut Drive. Kurt Vonnegut was from Indianapolis. You could have named it Roadie McRoadface, like anything better than Ditch Road.
Roadie McRoadface.
But that's one of the main thoroughfares of Indianapolis. Hey, where are you going to, I'm going to get myself a house on Ditch Road, I is.
Yep.
They also have, this is another thing they could do on one of those off days.
Yeah.
They have the world's largest ball of paint in Alexandria.
Okay, stop
Indiana.
It. That's not a real thing.
That's 100% true.
You made
that
up.
I learned it in that book. I learned it in that John Green book. It's the world's largest ball of paint.
In Alexandria, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
That's what they've got there.
All right, Seth, on the way out here, is this where we give the Vanessa Richardson exemption? That you, all the things you said, you meant 100%, except for Vanessa Richardson, Mo from the Morning Bull, Sarah Pepper, and DP Sidhu.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah, that's it. That's just those four.
Somebody texted in the people from I like Kurt Vonnegut. He was Kurt Vonnegut was in my fraternity at Cornell.
Really?
Not at the same time.
I was just going to say he looks much older.
He's pretty old, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was cool. He was up, like, his picture from his class was up on the wall.
That's
there.
That's neat. That's
cool.
Neat. All right. If the odds makers are accurate, this will still be a great weekend for the Texans, win or lose on Sunday. We'll explain next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so looking at the slate of games on Sunday this week, we're one game into the weekend, no real impact on the Texans. Giants lose last night on Thursday Night Football to the Washington Football Team on a last-second field goal. But there are, obviously, it's a full slate of games this weekend. Here's the good news if you're a Texan fan. They play in the game. This is not the good news. I'm just laying out the one detail about the Texans. They play in the game with the most lopsided spread of the weekend, the Texans do. I think it's up to 13 in some places.
It's the most lopsided the Browns have ever had in their favor since they became a team again in 1999.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like that, by the way. You know, like, do you know what? Go big or go home.
Did you just said that?
Yeah, I didn't say it was the biggest spread. I didn't say it was the biggest in Browns' recent history. I said it was the biggest of the weekend. So the Texans,
biggest of the weekend.
Texans are the biggest underdog of the weekend. So it's an uphill battle. We know that. Here's the good news. The good news is this: that if the odds makers are right about these spreads and they've set them accurately, the Texans, and it plays out that way on the field, the Texans will still be in first place by themselves after this weekend because the Rams are favored in Indianapolis over the Indianapolis Colts by 3.5. The Titans are 5.5-point underdogs in Seattle. Really like the Seahawks in that one. And the Jags are they are underdogs by nearly a touchdown at home to the Denver Broncos. So if the odds makers are correct, Seth, win or lose, we will still be able to come in on Monday and say first place Houston Texans 2 weeks into the year. I'm telling you right now, the schedule lines up so much better for the Texans to be relevant for about 5 or 6 weeks this year than it does for the other teams in the division. I just laid out the Colts schedule for the first month and a half of the season. It's ridiculously hard. The Titans, I don't think, are as good as we thought they were going to be. They've got a tough schedule to start the season. To wit, they follow up the Cardinals with the Seahawks this week in Seattle. And I think every game is going to be hard for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Texans got the Panthers next Thursday. They got a rookie quarterback in week 5 with New England. They can hang around for a little while is all I'm saying. For those of you that are marking off days on the calendar until Davis Mills gets in and starts games for this team, you might be marking off days for a little while longer than you thought you would be to start the season. That's all.
Which is not the most inspiring speech to give, Sean, before this is like rooting for a tie or something in soccer when you're team has fewer, however the hell they do it, your team has fewer points than the other division or whatever.
Yeah.
There is the same more points in the other division. I don't know how it works, Sean, in soccer. I do know that it's not like there's not going to be at least one upset amongst those four.
Yeah. I think chances are the Texans are tied with somebody at 1-1 at the end of the season in the AFC South. I think those are the odds, but I like that the AFC South, I like that the Colts and the Titans appear to be regressing a little bit here. You know, like kind of one of them's going to have to win the division. Somebody's going to have to win this division. And I like that the Colts and the Titans, those games feel a little bit easier early in the season.
Oh, you know, this whole discussion's making me feel kind of icky inside.
Why?
Like a whole, because it's got, it reeks of, hey, division champs, Brian. It reeks of like, oh, okay.
When you're power ranked 32nd going into the season, you're allowed to celebrate a division championship if you get one.
Honestly, and I, you know what, I turned, one time I was on with Clint and Ron. Oh, man, I think I was supposed to be on with him yesterday. Uh-oh. I think I'm going to start being on with him again every every week.
Oops.
I think I agreed to be on with him on Thursdays. Maybe it's Tuesdays. I don't know.
This is a big-time broadcast.
Time, yeah, one time I was on with Clint, and Clint kind of said, look, Seth, I know you played in the league, and you know that it's no easy thing to win a divisional championship. And I just let him go with it because I didn't want to get in an argument about something non-essential. But, like, I honestly – the division championship is one of the most bogus things in sports. The four winning a four-team division in the NFL is a joke. I really honestly put very little credence into it. It annoys me. It was one thing back when there were five-team divisions. Like, the other major sports leagues do it the honorable way and have at least five teams in a division. But you win a four-team division, and, yeah, some years you're just in a crappy division and you win, but it doesn't mean you're a good team. And it's kind of like the college coaches that keep their jobs by going to a bowl game every year. I'm like, okay, great. You went to some, you know, regional generic brand motor oil bowl, you know, 3 years in a row, and somehow that's validation of you as a coach.
Okay, I think there's a good chance the AFC South champion is sub 500 this year. Like, I think eight and nine might win the division. Here's where I'm going with this. Would you rather the Texans win the division at 8-9 or have the first pick in the draft?
Oh, you're a son of a bitch.
I'm putting you to the test now, buddy.
I would like them to win the division. Damn you. Because I've kind of gotten on board with this whole kind of tanking with dignity thing.
Yeah.
But you're fast forwarding to the end where you're saying, like, okay, you've already lived the misery of having a completely hopeless season where you feel bad about everybody all the time. What's the consolation prize? Oh, we got the number one overall pick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, as I sit here right now, like, I say it's an unfair question because you're bypassing, like, 3, 4, 5 months of your life, which, like, as Kyle Shanahan would tell you, I might be dead in February, Sean, and I'll never get this season back again. I want to watch the team compete, and I want to believe that they're having some kind of laying some kind of a groundwork. And this is the big difference. Unlike every other team that goes 7-10 or 8-11 or however it works, 8-9. What the 17?
I hate the 17-game season, dude.
Whatever, like, none of those teams ever also have the prospect of getting three extra first-round picks over the next couple of years.
Right.
Or whatever they get for Deshaun Watson. So that's what makes it – I think that's why the Texans are in a little bit of a – I don't know if you call it a luxury situation, but they have the ability to actually try to win but also still load up on first-round draft picks because they're going to trade away Deshaun Watson at some point, hopefully before the 2022 draft. So that's where I'll say I'm okay with this whole notion of building a culture and building a foundation and all that stuff.
So what I heard is you would rather go 8-9 and win the division. That's what I think I heard you say.
Yeah, but I'm not going to be, like, parading around wearing an AFC South Champs t-shirt or anything.
Okay, well, then on this show, you're going to be by yourself because I will be, Sean, adorned in AFC South champion gear.
Sean, back in my day, back in the old AFC Central,
right?
Once this team called the Cleveland Browns came around, we had six teams in our division.
Wow.
Six teams. That, talk about a bloated division. You try to win a division with six teams in it. That's a whole other scenario altogether. Sure, one of them was an expansion team. But
did you win the division?
I don't think we won it with six. No, okay. We never won it with a – maybe we did. I don't think we did.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. It's hard, man.
Yeah. I'm told. You know what I'm told? Winning in the NFL is difficult. And yet 16 teams do it every week. It's amazing.
It's an 8-8 league, Brian. Yeah. It's an 8-8-1 league.
8-8-1. Yeah. What would Bill O'Brien be saying if he were still an NFL head coach?
8-8-1. I asked that question on Twitter. That was the most popular response.
8-8-1.
It's an 8-8-1 league, man. It's an 8-8-1 league.
That'd be the best. Someone texted this question in. This is along the lines of what you and I were just talking about. What if Tyrod Taylor plays pretty good this year? They go 6-11. Would you go quarterback? Okay, if they go 6-11, they're probably picking around 10th or 11th, you know, like 10 through 12. The texter asks, would you go quarterback in the draft or best player available? Seth, I think these questions are so difficult to answer when you're talking about picking somewhere in the middle of the middle to upper end of the first round without knowing what quarterback is sitting there at 10 through 12. Like, my answer would be I wouldn't shut the door on a quarterback. But I'm not going to force a pick. Like, if I'm picking 12th, I'm not going in the draft going, coming away with a quarterback. You know, like, I if the quarterback that you want is there at 12, like it was with Deshaun Watson in 2017, and you either need to make a move to get him or you're sitting at 12 yourself, then you take him. If not, you go best player available.
Yeah, I think that's – you can't let – there shouldn't be any part of Tyrod Taylor that affects whether or not you take a quarterback.
Yes, that's the best way to put it.
The very reason Tyrod Taylor is here is that he is – I'm more convinced than ever – he's the perfect bridge – he might be the perfect bridge quarterback because his temperament is so even-keeled. Like, he's so mature, and I think he's probably a guy that's able to I'm not saying it's easy for him to do this, but I think he's capable of kind of suppressing his own ego that when it's time to help the younger guy or when it's time to turn the reins over, what have you, he's still going to be just as much an asset. And he's learned – I like guys that have been in a lot of places because they've learned a lot of different schemes. They've taken a lot from different people. And, yeah, that's what he's here for. He's here so that you don't have to make a hard decision between him and the next guy.
Do you think he's back next year, Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah, I think so.
He's on a
one-year deal. For all those reasons. Because I think he's the – I know it's not like they're going to say, hey, we're going to have Davis Mills tutor this first round pick until he's ready to go.
No, I just wonder if he plays well this year, if he's gonna, you know, if there'll be some — I'm not saying offers for Tyrod Taylor where he gets 4 years, $100 million or anything like that, but I just wonder if there'll be a team more willing to pay Tyrod Taylor some money to be a bridge quarterback, or if it's a team, you know, like, let's, for example, let's say Ben Roethlisberger retires in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A team like that feels like, you know, feels like, okay, we've got everything but a veteran quarterback. We don't want to throw a rookie in there. You know, could Pittsburgh, if Tyrod Taylor — it's one game into the season, I get it. So it could turn out that Tyrod Taylor doesn't have a good year. To me, if they go 6-11, it means Tyrod Taylor probably had a decent year given the state of the talent around him on this team. And so I think there could be a market out there for him.
Somebody says, come on, Seth, ask David Culley and Nick Caserio if making the playoffs after being projected the worst team in the entire NFL is bogus. I'm still saying, yeah, it's good to make the playoffs. That's great. But I'm just not – it's not like winning the division. I just don't like the actual, like, hey, we're division winners.
Right.
People try to use saying, hey, we're division winners, as somehow being better than, hey, we're 7-10 or we're 8-9 or whatever it is. Like, no, good for you. You're much better than people thought you were going to be, but it's not anything that you should put on your resume.
No.
Like, Bill O'Brien, it felt like Bill O'Brien was always trying to either prop himself or his team up by claiming these division championships when, like, no, what you're saying is you were a slightly better than average football team.
Right.
It's your division championship doesn't make you all of a sudden better than the second place team in the NFC West.
Yeah.
Like, those are undeniable facts that those harder division teams don't really good teams don't win division championships.
Your take right now on this has nothing to do with the 2021 Houston Texans. You know what I mean? Like, it really has more to do with the 2016 and 2015 Houston Texans than it does the 2021 Houston Texans.
I have a bone to pick with you, by the way.
With me?
Because earlier when we were talking about whether certain players on the team might get Wally pipped.
I had
said, I errantly said, you know, who's going to be the Joe DiMaggio, when Wally Pipp was the player who was replaced by Lou Gehrig.
Oh,
but
yeah.
In my mind, as I was saying that sentence, I was trying to remember if it was Lou Gehrig or Joe DiMaggio,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, oh, I'll just throw one out there and Sean will correct me. And you didn't correct me.
So then
I ended up having to get corrected by 20 different people on the
show. So that's my fault. Okay. I mean, I was probably focused on something else in the moment. You know what I mean? I was probably, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to this show.
Somebody says you guys are go ahead.
No, I was going to say, plus the handbook says you don't jump in and correct your co-host.
No, but that's with normal co-hosts. When I mess up names and everything, like I do as frequently as I do, I feel like for the good of the listener, it's important that you just jump in and clarify.
I got you.
Because then some poor kid, you know, some kid stopped listening to the radio, went to school, and now he's telling his buddies about how Joe DiMaggio got Wally pipped or something.
Right.
And he's going to look like an idiot
now. And how Lou Gehrig used to bang Marilyn Monroe, that kind of thing.
And
he's
that
got
kid,
it all
and that
reversed.
Kid might be a person of like average intelligence. He doesn't have the brilliance of myself to offset his little name transpositions and whatnot.
Right. No, yeah, you have another 3 hours and 59 minutes of the show where you were amazing other than botching those two. You're absolutely right.
Somebody also says that we're missing the history of Houston football, that they went decades without winning divisions. But this is the difference there. Again, that you didn't win divisions because the Pittsburgh Steelers existed. You know, like it's a different dynamic with every division in football. It's not like all division championships are created equal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. We're getting a lot of texts. Okay, I like that we're still kind of sitting in a part of the schedule here 1 week in where people can text this stuff in with a straight face. I do. I like this. I like that we're in a happy part of the schedule. We'll see how we're feeling on Monday. Guys, what if the Texans actually do really well, go 10-7, win the division, and make it to an AFC championship game? I don't know if you saw the game I saw last week, but they played really well. The defense was exceptional, and our everyday up-and-down quarterback did pretty well, too. Not to mention, this is where someone gets out over their skis. Not to mention, Davis Mills runs that offense better than Tyrod Taylor. But Taylor is an excellent quarterback as of last week. Yes, Seth, they've got a nuclear weapon sitting on the bench right now named Davis Mills, according to this texter.
Davis Mills has yet to look good in the NFL. That's one problem with that. Mm. Two, I mean, Davis Mills was really bad in the preseason.
Yeah.
I think maybe because you judge rookie quarterbacks differently, and he's a third-round pick, you know, it's not like you're sitting there saying, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he's this bad. He was really bad in the preseason. Mm-hmm. That was like, it wasn't, yeah, there's room for him to improve. Hey, Aaron Rodgers sucked in the preseason. I'm not saying that that's a death knell to his career or anything. It's just that he's not anywhere close to being better than Tyrod Taylor right now. The other thing is, and now I'm not saying that the Texans can't beat the Browns. It would be a huge upset if they do and be awesome if they did. So, and it is possible. It's the NFL. Anything could happen on any given Sunday. But the Jaguars are a definitively bad football team.
Yeah.
With a rookie quarterback who is starting his first game ever. The Browns, if you look at almost every single position on the Browns versus the Texans, they have a better football player at that position.
Yep.
In almost every spot, other than a few. Like, but out of the 22 starting positions, I would say on at least 17 of them, they have a definitively better player at that position. So that's why the point spread is 13 points right now. That's why the Texans are such underdogs. But I'm not that, which means that if the Texans pull this one off, there will be nobody more excited about it than myself. It is possible. It's just it's a much greater challenge than last week.
No doubt. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, the Astros beat the Rangers last night like a drum, 11-1. So they take 3 out of 4 in that series. The three wins, they won 15-1, 7-2, and 11-1. The Rangers are a really, really bad baseball team. The bigger story in this one as Arizona comes to town this weekend is that Framber Valdez sliced his finger during pregame warmups in some sort of jag in the fence out there where he was shagging fly balls. I'll let Dusty lay out exactly what happened with Framber.
You know, he cut his index finger on his pitching hand, and he was leaning against the wall, and there must have been a jag in the wall or something, and he had a light slice in there that makes it tough on your forefinger to pitch. So, but you know, it wasn't too deep, and it's TBA. We're trying to figure out, you know, how long it's going to heal, and he might be able to pitch this weekend.
All right, so that's the update on Framber. The update with the pitching staff is Luis Garcia got pushed up by one day to pitch last night against the Rangers. Good for him. He pitched really, really well. Brandon Belak is going to start on Friday. Here's Dusty on that decision.
His velocity is good. He's throwing the ball well. He was the most stretched out guy. That's why we sent him down to start. And, he was up to like 90 pitches. And so if he can minimize his pitches early, we're hoping that he can go deep in the game. We got a pretty fresh bullpen because of the last 2 days. And so, that's why we chose Belak.
All right, so there you go. They chose Brandon Belak will start tonight, Seth. Luis Garcia now, by the way, 11-7 on the season, 3.37 ERA. I haven't looked at the odds board for Rookie of the Year, but Luis Garcia is having a hell of a rookie year for the Astros.
Oh, he was the favorite, at least at one point.
Okay.
And I guess the thing I always wonder about with postseason awards is whether or not there's a little bit of a soft ban on Astros players. And it hasn't quite worked out, other than that I don't think has anybody won a gold glove since
No, and Correa should have won one last year.
Yeah, Correa this year, because it's tough sometimes to judge defense, but by war metrics alone and everything, and a lot of the defensive metrics, he's really, really, really head and shoulders above any other good shortstop. So if Correa doesn't win a gold glove this year, I feel like there's a little bit of a soft boycott of the Astros with the postseason awards, which would be particularly unfair for Luis Garcia. I get it. Look, if you want to do it for Bregman or Correa or whoever else, fine, so be it. But for Luis Garcia, look, it's a pitcher who was not on the squad in 2017, and it would be extremely unfair.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that they will not suffer from that, the Astros, moving forward, because they had so many guys make the All-Star team this year. And part of that is writers and peers and things like that.
Peers, because the fans got them close, but it was the peers.
It's true, it's
that
fans,
got,
yeah.
Yeah, for the I mean, there was enough, because I think there was, I can't remember the breakdown, but chosen by the player, the managers and the peers, that's what really matters, because that shows you like how many players, for the most part these days, are starting to say, like, yeah, it's no big deal, nobody cares about this anymore. And also, please don't look too far into our past. Let's just all let this die. That's what Evan Gattis said on that podcast. It was like, hey, you heard a lot of guys pipe up immediately after the results were released, but then you didn't hear much after that. And guys on the Astros made some calls around the league that were like, hey, we know what you guys were doing. You know, are you sure this is what you want to be piping off about?
Yep. All right, Texans, next headline. Texans, they play the Browns on Sunday, as we'll continue to talk about here over the next couple hours and the next several hours here on the station, In the Loop, and then the afternoon show after that. The injury report out yesterday has one thing that is concerning me, Seth, and it is Pharaoh Brown, the Texans' starting tight end, their best tight end. Was for the second straight day a did not participate in practice because of multiple listed injuries, a shoulder and a knee. So no Pharaoh Brown. Desmond King and Lonnie Johnson both at practice but limited. Andre Roberts back at practice yesterday. So that's sort of the rundown here. How concerned are you about Pharaoh Brown? Look, the Texans need all the firepower that they can get. And, you know, it's not like Pharaoh Brown is Tony Gonzalez or anything like that. But to me, he's clearly this team's best tight end. And if you're going to want to run the football, like we know the Texans are going to want to try to run the football, not having Pharaoh Brown out there is a negative, to be sure. How concerned are we with two DNPs this week in practice? This does not appear to be trending in the right direction for Pharaoh Brown.
He had two. I thought you were talking about there were two another player that you were trying to.
No. He's been DNP both practices.
I guess I don't know. Kind of okay. If you had asked me at the beginning of the season, hey, what if Pharaoh Brown's not on this team this year? I'd have said, all right, well, somebody's got to step up. Jordan Akins is going to have a better year this year, I think, than he had last year. I think Brevin Jordan at some point, needs to get some opportunities. So, I guess. Concerned, but I think that this is the kind of year where other guys are going to step up at some point, and I'm more eager to see that, if anything. Pharaoh Brown can start, prove that he can play through injury. That's another, you know what, Sean? That's another damn thing. I'm going to sound like a crusty old man here. Part of being a really good football player, because I've seen a lot of guys in the last few years on the Texans roll through and have promising games, but then have all kinds of injury issues here and there. Part of it is, okay, how good are you when you're playing through injury? Mm-hmm. And on this team especially, you don't have the luxury of saying, like, oh, I'm a first-round pick, and I'm just going to play when I feel comfortable or healthy or whatever. If Pharaoh Brown can play 14, 15, 16, 17 games this year, then I'll feel good about him. If he's not consistently out there every week, then he's not the guy.
Yeah, it's not like he moves the point spread, but, I mean, you've made the point a few times during the show today about how stellar the Browns are in that front seven, and especially on the edge. You know, like, he's their best blocker, you know, him and Auclair.
I guess, the talent disparity is so great between these two teams that one guy isn't going to be the difference. Yeah. Like, it has to be a huge, awesome team effort by the Texans.
Yep.
So, like, for me to wring my hands over Pharaoh Brown would be acting like this is going to be a close game no matter what, and that's going to be what tips the scales. I think that maybe, you know who I'd really love to see show up this week?
Who?
Philip Lindsay. Philip Lindsay wouldn't stop talking about how everybody was selling them short and nobody gives them enough credit and all that stuff. And yet I've seen nothing out of Philip Lindsay. Show me something. Show me something this week, Philip Lindsay. I want to hear, he talks like he's Pat Beverly. I want to see him play like he's Pat Beverly.
He does talk like he's Pat Beverly. You're absolutely right. All right, last night, next headline, Thursday Night Football. Really entertaining game last night in the NFC East between the Giants and the Washington football team. If you missed it, Taylor Heinicke, Texan fans, you remember him. Guy was on the practice squad here for a little bit, got a cup of coffee on the main roster back in that horrible 2017 season, got in for about a dozen snaps, got concussed, and then his Texans career was over. If you haven't been keeping track of Taylor Heinicke, he has kind of elevated himself to a high-level backup in the NFL to the point where he threw for 300-some-odd yards last night and engineered a victory that involved a couple of gifts from the New York Giants. But Washington gets the win last night on a last-second field goal. It was a game in which the Giants dropped a wide-open touchdown pass that would have extended their lead in the fourth quarter. It was a game where, I guess, more to the point, the Washington football team, Dustin Hopkins, their kicker, missed what would have been the game-winning field goal from 48 yards with no time remaining. But Dexter Lawrence of the New York Giants jumped off sides, so they got a reprieve, got to try the field goal again. Second time was a charm. They made the field goal. They win the game. So the Giants are now 0-2. Seth, the Giants are 0-2. You'll like this because you hate Joe Judge so much. 0-2 for the fifth straight season. They start the year 0-2, and someone asked this question on the text page. If the Giants go 0-3 next week and get desperate, would 2-1s, 1-2, and Saquon Barkley for Watson be a good deal? This is where we are. We're going to start to get to some of these teams that were in the Deshaun sweepstakes, or we expect them to be in the Deshaun sweepstakes maybe after the season, and people are going to be texting in hypothetical deals for teams like the Giants, the Lions. There's going to be a whole new slew of teams coming in for Deshaun Watson.
The big question, then the question is, okay, which GMs are the most desperate? Because I think I was one of the first to say, look, what GM is going to risk his job, you know, trading for Deshaun Watson, and then all of a sudden maybe Deshaun gets suspended for 2 years or something ridiculous like that. Or not ridiculous, but something, you know, unprecedented.
Drastic,
like that.
Yeah.
But GMs get desperate too. Dave Gettleman, the GM of the Giants, might get a little bit desperate and start worrying for his job, because he's been awful damn obstinate about how all these decisions he's made, drafting a running back high, drafting Daniel Jones where he did, all these things. He's been downright indignant that people would even question him about it. And meanwhile, the offensive line just flat out sucks.
Yep.
He might be desperate enough. I guess the question is, can he pull the wool over the owner's eyes long enough?
That's the biggest thing. You bingo. Yeah. You nailed it. That's exactly what I was going to say, which is any team that trades for Deshaun Watson, whether it were the Giants or the Dolphins, that is a decision that is going to involve everybody all the way up to the owner. Regardless of when it happens, it's going to involve the owner because of the nature of what Deshaun Watson has A, been accused of, and B, admitted to, you know? So you're absolutely right. By the way, would 2-1s, a 2, and Barkley for Watson be a good deal? No, that would not be a good deal for Deshaun Watson. 2-1s, a 2.
2-1s,
and Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and Saquon Barkley has already had a major knee injury and hasn't been as impressive as people hoped. I think Saquon Barkley behind a really good offensive line would be interesting. Maybe the Texans can. I think the Texans have the potential over the next couple years to end up having a really good offensive line. If they draft well, maybe bring in a free agent here or there, I think they could end up having a really good offensive line. A lot of that depends on Titus Howard. You know, Titus Howard, if he's going to be a guard, he needs to make a few improvements this week, and I think he will. It's not an easy transition going from right tackle to left guard. But they've got enough young talent there that just one or two extra pieces could be really, really good.
Did you see that, totally off the beaten path here, but I'm just clicked on an article, and then I'm looking at a link next to the article, and it's got river otters in it. Did you see that we have river otters in Houston? in Buffalo Bayou?
Yeah, no. Yeah, they've I never knew that until they emerged in Buffalo Bayou during with the flooding from a few days ago. And if somebody I first saw it and I thought somebody somebody saw something else. Like a nutria or something and thought that it was a river otter. No.
They filmed
they're
it.
Adorable little otters right there in the Buffalo Bayou.
Are otters adorable?
Yeah, they're super cute.
Are they friendly?
I don't know if they're friendly, but they're playful and cute. I think they might be a little bit like weasels in that they're kind of playful and fun.
Okay.
So yeah, you're not supposed to go up and try to pet them or anything like that. Don't do that, kids. But they're super cute. Do they lay on their back, you know, and they frolic around in the water? But if somebody told me that, if somebody would have said like, oh yeah, I saw an otter down in Buffalo Bayou. I don't like, no, you didn't. You didn't. I would have been really annoyingly smug about it. Like, that's not true.
Piranha frolic around in the water, too.
A lot of Houstonians didn't realize that there are river otters in the bayou. Partly because one thing that they're super sensitive to is pollution.
Okay.
So I don't know what kind of hardy...
What are you saying, Seth? The Buffalo Bayou is polluted?
Whatever river otters we have in Buffalo Bayou are some of the most badass otters alive.
They're freaking nuclear.
I don't think they should be living there. I don't think it's possible. Yeah. It's a city of 6 million people, and that's all of our flood runoff going through that bayou right there. It's gone through over all the gas stations and concrete and everything, and yet those river otters are not just living, but frolicking and playing.
But we didn't know. Okay, by the way, you're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Like, as to your point, this was the first we'd seen them. Where have they been hanging out?
I guess somebody said that because the trails that they usually use are flooded over.
Okay.
They're coming up onto bare ground. It's like you might not usually see them because they stay around if they're coming out of the water, they're in the brush and everything.
Yeah.
But all that brush was covered up. So, but those bayou parks, they've done an amazing job with those in making them pretty much like amphibious. Like they'll flood and then they go away and it just recovers back like nothing.
Very walkable too. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.